हरिः श्रीहद्वैतगदाधरशिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
So lesson 30. The next stage is to regulate habits, diet, practice fasting on special days, such as Ekadasi, etc. Because before it was that by Krishna's grace only we can understand him. We'll do that through hearing from the spiritual master. And then somehow or another, we connect ourselves to Krishna. Right? So as we've made that attempt, we've connected. Then it says the next stage is to regulate the habits, right? Because right, you have Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, right? Next is Bhajan. 6:14. So it's 6:14-18. With an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. Right? So, unagitated, subdued, here, devoid of fear, that we understand who we are, what our relationship with Krishna is. We're not afraid of, I'm servant of Krishna. Because if you think about it, we'll think, no, I'm not afraid about it. If we're not afraid of it, then what is the element of not wanting to surrender? Right? Because we know what to do. We know I'm servant of Krishna, this is what I should do. But this is actually what I'd like to do. Right? So if we're not afraid of, because we're afraid of it, because surrendering means all the things I like to do may not be always ideal. Sometimes they may match, sometimes not. You know? Does that make sense? So this free, devoid of fear means, is it something working on? It simply means this, we're gradually, step by step, establishing that identity that I'm servant of Krishna. Right? So that's why in Bhav Sadhana, the first stage being, Shravana Dasa. We hear about our relationship with the Lord. All right, and having heard about that, then we're able to adjust with it. Right? So Shravana Dasa and Varana Dasa means we adjust with it, we're comfortable with it. So these stages, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, starts at the beginning of the devotional process. Though it's the first two stages of Bhava Bhakti. Because they've started back from when you heard, right? We hear about Krishna. We get faith. We associate with devotees. We surrender. Right? So it started then, and then gradually, by the time you get to Bhava, then we're nicely situated in it. Because the first point is that I fully accept I'm servant of Krishna. Right? That's the first thing. The second thing is okay, within Krishna's pastimes, I have this particular, service. Does that make sense? But if you haven't accepted this first part, the second part doesn't mean anything. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Right. Huh. Being in Krishna consciousness for us means we at least accepted that we are Krishna's servants?
Yes, means intellectually we've accepted, and there is some degree that the mind has accepted. So the emotions and that are connected with it, because we know ultimately it is in the overall, but there's sometimes little details, like that, Is that kind of thing. It's kind of like, you've cleaned up the floor in your room and everything like that and got all the toys out from under your bed, but you've kind of shoved them in a corner in the closet. You know, so it's something is done, but it's not complete, you know. And you're just praying that mommy doesn't look in the closet, you know. Is that? Yeah. So like that, and then gradually, then one by one, all these things happen. You know, regular habits, diet, practice of fasting, all these things, they slowly come. We may like them, we may not like them, you know. Or we may like, fasting, you know, because we're tough and all that. And then when, you know, we get sick and we're not so tough, then, you know, it's a whole different...
Or the day after the fasting, we go bonanza and more precise.
Yes. Balance, right? Fanatically, you know, I renounce, so fanatically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Advancement is not possible without control of the senses. Krishna is the ultimate goal of life, and the Vishnumurti situated in one's heart is the object of yoga practice. Because he's there, and it's whatever we're doing, then he is in control of that. Because he'll be Aniruddha, right? Paramatma is Aniruddha, who is... He's the goal, right? Because in yoga practice, you want to attain Paramatma, so he's the goal, the Prayojana, so that makes him Aniruddha. Right? So whatever you're trying to do with the mind, so he's the one that the unagitated, subdued mind is focused on. Right? It means, ultimately it's Krishna, but what we're saying in this process of purification, it's Super Soul that we're working with. Right? Because Krishna, we're working is on love. But when we're dealing with all these aspects of sadhana and trying to control, that's Paramatma. Because the Brajabasis aren't sitting there and, you know, getting up and, you know, like that and going, wow, it's so late at night and, you know, I've been doing this every night and it's so tired and I'd really like to sleep, but Krishna is blowing his flute and it's so nice being with him, but, you know, it would be, you know, no, that doesn't happen. Does that make sense? You know, they're not worried about that. Right? So, therefore, then they're dealing directly with Krishna. Well, basically speaking, is that the mood is directed Krishna, and sometimes, you know, that mood will be nice, so it's very dynamic, but when we're wrestling with the process, or these things are looking at it through philosophy and intellectual and all that, then we're dealing with Paramatma. Right? But the nice, good thing about it is Krishna's Paramatma, like that. So then we don't have to worry, right? You know? It's just that we're dealing with him in that way, so he reciprocates in that way. Yes?
Did you say that you don't get tired if you're dealing directly with Krishna?
You don't get tired if you're dealing directly with Krishna? You could say that, but it's also those who don't get tired, then they always deal directly with Krishna. You know, so it goes both ways. So dealing with Krishna, you wouldn't get tired, but it's a matter of the consistency of always being able to deal with Krishna. Like that. So that's why when we're practicing, then it's not as consistent, and it's coming up to a stage of consistency. But Phala bhakti, or when you've gotten the result, then there's no need of practice. One is situated there. So one is, it's always consistent. Because that's what's looked at. Bhava means just being on and off, being on the liberated platform and off the liberated platform. That's what we call sadhana bhakti. Right? That takes us up to asakti. When we're always on the liberated platform, but it's a matter of being always absorbed in Krishna or not, that's bhava bhakti. Right, so that's why it's a sadhana. But its sadhana is different from the Kanista and Madhyama stages of sadhana. So it's in its own category. Then when it comes to prema, then that's permanent. Right? So that means our focus on Krishna, that affection, is always consistently directed at Krishna. Mm-hmm. To realize this Vishnumurti within the heart, one has to observe complete abstinence from sex life. Therefore, one has to leave home and live alone in a secluded place. Remain at seating, as mentioned above. Right? So this is sixth chapter, so we're dealing with the yoga process. In other words, for it to be fully... Because here, sex life has a broader meaning. Because here it says abstain from sex. That he could easily say, but sex life means... sex means that it's, how do you say, there's a lifestyle that goes with it, right? So therefore the facilities for it, all the different aspects that go along with it, right? So when that is not there, then one can fully focus on the Lord. Yes.
So it's basically the lower levels of consciousness that are not there?
Yeah, you could say, but basically you could say is that another would be is that which is not connected to Krishna, right? It means, in other words, the indirect no longer exists as indirect.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're not starting with yourself and some need you have, or some idea, desire, or some conditioning you have, then dovetailing that in Krishna's service. Right? Because once it's dovetailed, then that's a problem, because then it's no longer sex life. But there's that process of getting it from material conditioning to the devotional process, which is all the techniques that have been given in these chapters. These first six chapters give these techniques. But how to start with that and connect it. Once it's connected, it's not a problem. Right? Like we see, the Pandavas, they're having children. So it's not that. But sex life here means it's the lifestyle that goes along where it's actually sex is a prominent element of it. Right? So that means gross, that we'll generally think, but also subtle, distinction, adoration, and profit. Right? So here, when we're talking about realize the Vishnumurti, we're talking about the whole package. So even if one is not having sex, but the one is worried about prestige and profit, facility, you know, all these different things, then that's still the subtle aspects of it. Right? So that's why it said the next stage is to regulate habits, diet, and practice fasting, because that will bring one to that platform of being freed from, in this case, sex life. Right? Because the whole material world is called by Tuna Agara, the shackles of sex life. Because it's everything about it. It's just anything, the prestige. You know, so, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. Right? This means is that it's one's freed from those desires. One has the proper attitude, humility, tolerance, respect of others, not expecting for yourself, and you've removed the desire for material, you know, that endeavor. Then, then we can fully surrender to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just, it's natural. So that means, basically speaking, by ruchi, then this is accomplished. Right? So this means you could take this that the ideal, because in yoga practice, this will be here very direct, because in yoga practice, this Astanga yoga, there can be no sex life. So there is no grihastha Astanga yogi. You understand? Even if he's a grihastha, there is no sex life. Right? Like you see, who was it? I think Atri.
Yes.
And his wife. Then they went to the forest, and for 60,000 years they did meditation on the Supersoul. Seeing the Supersoul, then they come to the platform of devotion. Then they go back and practice their grihastha life. So they got married, then to prepare for proper married life, then they went out to the forest and for 60,000 years meditated on the Supersoul. Then they came back to their household life, right? You understand? So during the yoga practice, there is no room for that. So that means, just like in devotional service, there's no room for thinking of something else. But it doesn't mean that we're not starting with that which would make us think of something else. Right? That's the process of karma yoga and jnana yoga. We're starting with what does distract us. Right? Then, through the intellectual process or emotional process, we connect that to Krishna. Right? Then, it's then free from sex life. Does that make sense? You know. So the meditation happens when you're when you're meditating on Krishna, not when you're meditating on other things. It's just practical, right? It means one could take this and see all grihastha, this is all bogus nonsense. You know, the only devotion. You could do that, but that's not what it's meaning. Because if you're doing that, then there's the element of prestige that, yes, we're brahmacharis, and that, so therefore you were situated better. So that's still the subtle aspect of the sex life. You know what I'm saying? Better, right? The subtle is a better situation than the gross, but unfortunately the gross is a manifestation of the subtle.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, that makes sense. So if one's not careful in continuing the process, the subtle turns into gross. Yeah, it just goes back and forth. You know, so that's all. It's a cycle. So, you know, Maya knows how to keep you busy. You know, so she gives different varieties, you know. Yes, I'm so renounced, aren't I so good? You know, and then, you know, it goes back the other way. And so it just keeps swinging back and forth. Therefore, one has to leave home and live alone in a secluded place, remaining seated, as mentioned above. So here in the means we have the brahmacharya vanaprastha sannyas, and that's a matter of it's leaving home. So vanaprastha may be with the wife, but it's not exactly home, right? It means that you have that element, but that element is not being cultivated, right? Because the wife is there, you know, it'll be a nice environment, but you're not cultivating the nice environment. You're just maintaining, you know, to some degree, whatever is useful, what was already there from what was cultivated as a grihastha, right? So it's not about the wife anymore, because what makes a house a home is it's about the wife. So it's about all the things, how she wants to make it and have it all work nicely, right? So it's a nice environment. Now it's sadhana is the center of attention. So it's not about the husband, it's not about the wife, right? Some vanaprasas think, okay, vanaprasas, now it's all about me, I'm not the man now. I can be the man all those years having to, you know, do what the wife says and all that. I wanted to put on this shirt, she said put on that shirt, you know, like that. Now I can put on the whatever shirt I like, you know, white. Yeah, it's like, yeah. So it's like, does that make sense? So it's not about that, because it's not about either. Grihastha life is about that. Vanaprastha means it's not about that, right? So therefore, brahmachari vanaprastha sannyas, it's not about, one is not in the home. One's in a secluded place. Secluded means it's secluded from material engagement, right? Remaining as seated above means situated in devotional service. Does that make sense? Right. So therefore, the grihastha ashram is the more delicate of all the ashrams, to see that one is situated devotionally. But at the same time, it's the only one that affords dealing with a broad range of desires. The other three don't accommodate it. Right? They just don't have the facility. Right? So therefore, it's very useful to get one to that stage. Does that make sense? Right? Brahmacharya ashram is necessary to prepare so that you are actually able to engage the grihastha ashram. Right, or vanaprastha sannyas. In other words, brahmacharya is the foundation of the other three ashrams. Right? Without brahmacharya, without training, the other three ashrams aren't possible. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why in the beginning, those who aren't from the Vedic background, there's always difficulty with these other three ashrams in the beginning until, you know, practice. But the devotional process is so perfect that it itself is so powerful that one gains the qualification to follow these other three, even if the training is not so proper. You can get trained within it. It doesn't work as well. You know, it's more crazy. But it does work. You know? Does that make sense? So therefore, it's very clear that when we say these things, it's not a matter, well, that's, you know, okay, that was before, but now it's Kali Yuga, or now we have to be practical, everybody's married. No, the point remains. This is something to be very careful about, is that what Prabhupada's talking about always applies. What Krishna talks about, you just have to know the context to apply it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, let's say you're at a printing press, right? And then they have all the papers, and they have a ream of paper, and it goes into a machine, into a guillotine, and that guillotine cuts all the pages square. So you're talking about, you know, something this big, monstrous, very powerful. It's a cutting edge, and it cuts the thing. Same time as the housewife is sitting there with a nice little paring knife and peeling a tomato. The principle it applies, it's the same. But the application in one is very industrial, very big, very powerful. There's no subtleties about it. And the other one has all fineness and the art and all the other things. But it's still the principle remains that the knife is sharp, it cuts. Does that make sense? So as we saw here, as we're dealing with this element, just the sex life, what that means. Because the brahmachari is sitting there and it's the kirtan, they're playing the drum, and you know, and you see the shoulders going like that. That's not what the Gaudiya application of music means. Right? Because according to Bharat Muni, there's a smile on the face, it's very pleasant. It looks like effortless. You look at them and think, hey, I could do that. It looks so easy. You know, but if it looks like, wow, I couldn't do that, that's so tough, then that's dealing with this two words here. Right? So, does that make sense? So it means it hasn't been purified. But it's engaged in Krishna's service. It's just a matter of time that will be purified and will go away. Right? If the focus is there and sincerity is there. Right? Then it will go away. Because it's engaged. Right? In devotional service, it'll go away. If it's not devotional service, the Vedic system, it won't take it away. Not in one lifetime. You'll have to go through thousands of lifetimes to get rid of it. But devotional service in one lifetime could get rid of it. Does that make sense? So it always applies. You have something?
This is certain place. This means be free from material engagement.
Yes.
So what is, means you can sit in some day city in your bed and then just don't be engaged in some of your things, and then consider like a secluded place.
Yeah, secluded means when you're just thinking. Secluded means when you're just thinking of Krishna. But if you go to the forest, what are you thinking of? The mosquitoes, the flies. You know, if the storm's going to come, well, you know, will the lions, tigers, and bears come at night and eat you? You know, like that. You know, I saw this one cartoon thing. It had an igloo, right? You know, the Inuit home. And there were two polar bears, and they just bitten off the top, right? And they and the one was saying to the others, you know, I love these, you know, crunchy on the outside, soft on the inside, right? You know, like that. So just by that, one's out in what we call nature that's secluded. It doesn't mean that our mind will be focused on the Lord. So secluded means the idea is that if you're in the city or in these environments, you're surrounded by those things that are distracting you. Not that they're distracting, but those are the things you want, that you have a desire for. You surround yourself with that. So by going out into the forest, then there's none of that there. So then the idea is then you can focus. But the problem is there's every chance we take with us those desires out there. You know, we have our, you know, 4x4 muscle truck, and we have everything that you could possibly want out in the forest there in your back of your truck, right? You just put down the back, put out the barbecue, you know, it's all happening. You got your freezers, you got your beer, you know, so they haven't actually gone to a secluded place. So it means if we're going to take secluded here, we don't mean, you know, out on one of our ISKCON farms. We just take our city life and take it out there and turn it into suburbia. That's not secluded place. Secluded means there's nothing there that distracts you from Krishna consciousness. Right? So that is more naturally accomplished in a simpler environment. So even if one is in the city, you try to make your house more simple, you know, that everything is more streamlined, and it's all to Krishna, and you can understand either directly or indirectly its connection, right? Because generally speaking, there's a good chance there could be at least 2 to 3 times more stuff in our house than we actually require. I'm just saying on an average thing, but there's generally, if we go by the main formulas, is going to be 9 times what we require. You know. Yes.
Maharaja, I've always had the impression that secluded means being alone, but in this context, from what I'm getting out of what you said, that if one were to situate himself in a temple amongst devotees,
yeah,
can also be considered as secluded.
As secluded, yes. Because the point is everyone's chanting japa, everyone's focusing like that, so you're in a secluded place. Mm. Secluded means away from material thought, away from material endeavor, desire, you know, the whole material process. So in this case, sex life. It means that you don't have any identity with it, You don't have any desire, you don't have any goals, you don't have any endeavors. So there's no material endeavor. Does that make sense? So that's secluded. So you could be sitting in your home, you could be sitting in your office, anywhere where you are. And that mood is you're thinking of Krishna, and that you're in a secluded place. Right? And it's right? And it's all going great, and then the kids go from the back seat, go, "Are we there yet?" You know, and then you find you're not in a secluded place. You know? Right, yeah. So secluded means what you do with it. Means you have of course, in the Vedic system, you always have a situation. And there's always greater and lesser ideal situations. But it's what you do with the situation that's more important. Right? So you could be, you know, focused on Krishna in the city or completely absorbed in material thought in the country. Right? So, but the point is it's being absorbed in Krishna that you want. So, if you can arrange it that, okay, if I'm in this environment, it doesn't work so good, but let's say I'm at home, it doesn't work so good, but I go to the temple and it does, then that's what one does. You know? Does that make sense? You know, somebody, they want to clear their head, what do? They go out for a walk or for a drive or something to just get away so that they're not in their normal environment of distraction, because so many things are there. It's hard to think of Krishna. But if all those elements that distract you, you've connected to Krishna, then you're always secluded. You see your kitchen, your living room, everything, all the elements within it, all connected to Krishna, you're always in a secluded environment. So that's why it's said here, you reduce it down to what you can connect. You know what I'm saying? If your house is like full of tchotchkes, fine, as long as you can connect them all. But if it's not, then you might consider, you know, various charities and, you know, sanitation engineers and other kind of help to, you know.
Downsize.
Huh?
Downsize.
Yes, to, yes. You had something?
Well, that was connected before what you said about the ashrams, because you know, see that some, they just stick to one ashram, they don't progress.
But what do you mean by progress?
They don't go through the ashrams, they maybe just stay on the brahmachari ashram.
But that's fine, but you're already situated in transcendence.
So what's the requirement, you can say? That would be that one is this atmarati, one has to be fully satisfied.
Yeah, fully satisfied. Point is if one is situated as a brahmachari, just remains that way, that's fine. Narad Muni is a brahmachari, so, you know, can't be that bad, you know, like that. And, you know, his friend, I think, what's his name? Parvati Muni, he's like a vanaprastha, you know, so he's just situated there, you know, Vishishta, you know, these different. The point is this, the one you don't want to remain at is Grihastha, that has to progress to vanaprastha. Like that, because as Grihastha, it's dangerous.
So Brahmacharya doesn't necessarily need to progress to sannyas.
No, he doesn't. That's what it said. Brahmacharya does not have to go to vanaprastha sannyas, and from Brahmacharya you don't have to go to vanaprastha to go to sannyas, you know, like that. So, but it's important that Grihastha goes from Grihastha to vanaprastha. Vanaprastha simply means, in this case, is everything's been connected. It means, as a Grihastha, if everything is connected, like the Pandavas, there's technically no need to move on to the next, but they will anyway. Because they're only doing their duties as kings to set a good example. But part of setting a good example is that when they reach, you know, maturity, means, you know, old age, then you move on to the next ashram anyway. Right? Because no one will complain if you do it at that time. Right? Because if you do it earlier, then people will get grumpy. So you do it at that time.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Brahmachari ashram is like a training for the other two. Does it mean that, you know, Brahmachari should be trained, but how to be a Grihastha?
What does that mean, how to be a Grihastha?
Like, you know, be responsible and look after your families.
But be responsible, let's say, there's an Abhishek for Janmashtami and he's in charge of that. Is that responsible? Yeah, it means he has, you know, it's his duty to see the Brahmachari ashram is clean. Is that responsible? You know, he has to get himself out of bed at, you know, 4 o'clock every morning. you know, somebody else is not going to tell them. Or if they do, then they're not necessarily so nice. So, you know what I'm saying? He has his quota of books to distribute. Is that responsible? You understand? Responsible is responsible. The point is responsible for a woman. What Grihastha Ashram is putting into that is you're only responsible because you're attached. You understand? So because of that, you're adding the mind to it, which wasn't there as a brahmachari. Brahmachari is intellectual. You know that this is good, it's good for spiritual life, therefore that regulation I'll follow, therefore I'm responsible. But it's intellectual. But because it's intellectual, therefore we don't take it as seriously. Right? It means, you know, the academics, it's all theory. Right? Because the emotions aren't involved. So when the emotions are involved, then we say it's real. But actually, it's the other way around. The brahmacharis are actually responsible. The grihastha is very responsible, but only because he's attached. He's not attached, he's not responsible. You know what I'm saying? He's very attached. So therefore, you know, every month, you know, he says, you know, every month, and he gives the girl something, and wow, what's this for? Oh, it's our, you know, third month anniversary and all that, you know. But after they're married, he doesn't even remember, you know, when the anniversary is, you know, what universe it was in and all that. So, you know what I'm saying? So when we say responsible, generally what we're taking is due to false ego, is that we're having to take on a lot more things than we actually were planning to. Or expected. So the point is it's responsibility as a principle, not that is what is important. The brahmachari, just like this, the brahmachari, he's inconsiderate. He comes in at night into the brahmachari ashram. He was out late, so he flicks on the light. Right? So no one else can sleep. Why does he have to flick on the light? Because he doesn't know where his stuff is. Why does he know where his stuff is? Because he's not clean and organized. Right? But why is the grihastha man clean and organized? Because his wife does it, or she yells at him until he starts doing it. In other words, how much she's willing to do, she does. How much she feels he should do, she will force him to do. But because he's been forced, the grihastha man thinks he's superior to the brahmachari. But he's not. He's by force. You can say, yes, he has learned that, and if he is responsible, I mean, dutiful enough that he stays through 25 years of that, he is trained in being that. He will do that on his own. As a vanaprastha, even if he's not with the wife, he will be tidy and orderly and do things, because he's understood his higher fire purpose. But he didn't get there through any glorious means. So there is no real position for the grihastha, especially not the young grihastha or middle grihastha, to think that their position of responsibility and training is greater than a brahmachari. It's not. A mature grihastha or a vanaprastha, you could say yes. But the only reason that they agreed to that training is due to attachment only. You know what I'm saying? So the point is brahmachari means that they're clean and tidy. That means it's pitch dark. He knows where all this stuff is. He can walk in like that, but he doesn't do that. And keeping all this stuff in little plastic bags that make noise, so he sits there rustling bags all night, then he doesn't do that either because it bothers others. Right? Because the other guys would just say something or throw a shoe at him or something like that. And that's where it ends. The wife won't talk to him for 3 days. You know, that's worse. You know what I'm saying? So we can say, well, the brahmacharis don't learn, because the grihastha wouldn't learn also if all that did is the wife threw a shoe at him. You know, unless, of course, it was a stiletto. You know. You understand? So we have to see it in reality as brahmachari life in itself, if it's done properly. That's why I said, Prabhupada said, first-class brahmachari means he'll be a first-class grihastha. He did get the training. Because the point is when we say the training to take care of, so it means training to pay bills, or, you know, to not forget to buy the cauliflowers on the way home from work, you know, you should check in and let everybody know what you're doing, that you should remember important, you know, dates and festivals, and, you know, I'm saying, what do you mean? You know what I'm saying? So the actual, it's principles that you have to learn. Because detail, every grihastha, the actual exact details of his life are different. It's unique. You know what I'm saying? They're different, their wife is different, so it's unique. But the principles are exactly the same. The principles of grihastha life are exactly the same as brahmachari. The only difference is they're manifest through a wide range of applications that the brahmachari doesn't have. So because of that lack of wide range, there may not be the maturity and application that the brahmachari has, or the brahmachari won't have, that the grihastha will. But he only has that because of his attachment. You understand? So that's the thing that we miss. Like that. Vedic system people know that. At least when I came to India, you know, up in the 80s, that grihasthas know that. They know they're attached, they know this and that, but they know it's the situation they need to be in. So therefore the sadhus don't have any problem with their grihasthas, grihasthas don't have any problem with their sadhus. But those who don't understand this, they don't understand the drive for grihastha ashram, the drive for much of the time for leadership position is due to material desire. Then we have a thing of tending towards one position as superior to another. When the superiority of one to the other is its advancement in application. The grihastha is superior because he's now applying all those brahmachari principles in a wide range of activities that the brahmachari is not. That's his superiority. Not because he's married and now he's got an attitude. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
So is it easier for a grihastha to get realization
than a brahmachari? It's not necessary. The point is that a naistika brahmachari means he got the realization as a brahmachari, right? An upakurvana brahmachari means he has the same training, same knowledge, same experience, but the realization comes as a grihastha. That's the difference. So the point is the grihastha ashram is glorious in that if one applies the brahmachari training, one gets realization. The difficulty, we think brahmachari is one thing, grihastha is another, so we don't apply the principles. Right? You know, it's like we think that, oh, okay, I'm under the control of the temple commander, but now as a grihastha, I'm a free man. No, now you're under the control of the wife. She's a new temple commander. And she's a little more exacting. Right, you know, the other guy, as long as the floor was clean, he wasn't worried about how tidy the BTG boxes were in the closet. She is. In fact, why are they BTG? They're supposed to have two G's on them. You know, yeah. So it's only got one G. You know, like that. It's supposed to be two G's. Yeah.
He said that according to Veda, if man remains in the Vihastha ashram to the end of his life. It's considered like most degraded condition of life.
Yeah. Well, it's just the same what we said. They have to move on to vanaprastha. Vanaprastha doesn't mean not being with the wife. You can either means vanaprastha has. You could probably say that there's probably I've heard of a whole bunch. But there's maybe 10, 15 different subtitles that are given to a vanaprastha depending upon how he situates himself. So he's either sapatni or nirpatni, with the wife or without. That's what. He either takes his yajna things with him and does yajna every day like he did, or he doesn't. You know, he either goes out and collects grains in the fields, or he begs, or, you know, so many different things like that, or he doesn't endeavor for anything. So there's all these different vratas that he will take to try to detach himself from his previous position. You know what I'm saying? Because generally we think of vanaprastha, the guy's, he's in saffron, he's not a brahmachari because he's kind of been through the grihastha ashram, his ego's too big to consider himself a brahmachari. And he's, you know, he's trying to become a sannyasi, but no one's kind of recognized him yet, so he's kind of stuck in between. That's not a vanaprastha. You know what I'm saying? Vanaprastha means he is working on giving up the that drive towards all those things that were important to him as a grihastha because of attachment. Right? But he can continue doing those things that are connected to Krishna. Very nice. So if he was a good businessman, he's a good manager, he continues those. But now, instead of the business being, you know, to buy that, you know, fourth car, now he uses it for, you know, doing different kinds of service and things like that.
Yes.
have one more question. We discussed much of the topic, but still, I really wonder, like, within our movement, that many, quite many devotees, even Prabhupada disciples, in very advanced stage, age, like 60, after 60, they still get married. And
yeah, but we already No, but the point is what is the point? The point is regulate habits, right? The point is that we want to remember Krishna. So we remember Krishna by not forgetting him. That's the first stage, right? The second stage, we remember Krishna because we like remembering Krishna. We have an attachment to remembering Krishna. The reason that we forget Krishna is we have attachment to those things that we forget him by, right? So the point is there's a natural method that all those things that you either by intellect get rid of all other distractions, you know, and with that, on that from the platform of intelligence, then follow those practices that will remove those naturally, or one engages them in Krishna's service, right? So the Vedic system has a method on how to go through that. You get training, then you engage all the desires and retire from that, and then it's just everything's connected to the Lord. That's the natural stage. So it's recommended in that way because there's a time for everything, right? You know, it's like that. Getting trained, the younger you are, the better, because the ego's less. Grihastha life, you still have to be young enough and be very energetic that you deal with all these things, right? And then the vanaprastha, those are generally what the more maturity is there. Now, if you do those in a different order, it's not ideal, right? It's not ideal to be 60 years old and have to worry about, you know, little things like, you know, every time you go out, getting something and bringing something back and all these little things like that. You know, calling every, you know, couple of hours to make sure everything's okay and, you know, all that kind of jazz. So that works nice when you're young. When you're older, it's more of a maturity that you're confident, you know the other person's there, so you don't have to worry about it. You know? So that's why it's natural that you do it in that order. But if they do it in a different order, it's not ideal. It's going to be trouble. It's not going to work as nicely if they did it in the recommended order. But the point is see that these things are addressed, right? In other words, if you thought it would work in this way, nice. If it didn't, then you make adjustments until it does. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, go ahead and drink your water. Yes. Oh yeah, right here. We'll get back to it.
So, if you said that Shudras never leave home,
Shudras never leave home. Yes.
Us being lower than Shudras, what's the hope of?
We never actually get to the home. That's the problem. That's why you see there's such a high divorce rate and other psychological. But most of the problems that humans have, they're all engendered in the Grihastha Ashram. You know, we like to blame it on the brahmacharis, sannyasis, and, you know, leaderships and gurus, but actually it's that, you know, the kid has no respect for authority or has, you know, all these different problems because of what goes on in the home. You know what I'm saying? So that's because we don't actually attain to, so if we say we're lower than shooters are human, so at least they're Grihasthas. You know, so the Malechas and Yavanas, they don't necessarily get up to the human platform so that they can actually be Grihasthas. Okay, so that was a side point. Now you're at the actual.
Yes, sir. So
I was saying
what's
that was.
Hope?
What's the hope? The hope is devotional service. That's the point. Our only hope is devotional service. That's why we. It's only through devotional service we're engaged in Varnashram. So devotees will say, well, it's Krishna or Varnashram. You know, which is it? You know, like that. You know, which do you think is more important? Of course Krishna is more important. But the only way that we can follow Varnashram is through devotional service. So if we're not connecting to devotional service, there's no chance at all that we can follow Varnashram. So the only Varnashram we can follow is Daiva. There isn't an option for another. You're born in a nice traditional Brahmin, you know, Kshatriya Vaishya family here that follows all their traditions and it's been going on for generations, yes, then you may have a problem in engaging Varanasram because you'll forget because you're engaged in this nice sattvic environment that you don't remember that the material world's bad. You know, you walk in, you know, the front of your house, you know, the servant's there, you know, he just dropped you off in your limousine. You know, you walk in, somebody's there, takes a coat and stuff, big, huge, you know, your foyer is as big as most people's houses. You know, the Ming vases are there and all the different things like that. And then, you know, you walk down the hall, you go to your private quarters, you know, even though you're just the kid in the house. You know, you have your own room, you have your own, you know, your own walk-in wardrobe. You know, it's nice, you know, so what's the problem? So where are you going to remember Krishna there? So, but you're doing all the things and you have that wealth because of Varanasram. But there's no question the Westerner is following that. Where's the training? Where's the piety? You know? So the difficulty comes is the only way we can follow the material piety is because of devotional service. So for us then, Daiva Varanashram, there is only Daiva Varanashram. The other is not an option. You know, it'd be like, you know, the guy, the beggar in the street, well, you know, I could just move into the temple like this and be very renounced in that, or, you know, I could engage my billions of dollars in Krishna's service. It's like, no, you only have one option. You know. So the same with us, is our only option. So Varanashram is therefore a method of, as we saw before, Krishna's saying, you're engaging pious activities in his service. Impious, the reason they're called impious is because Krishna doesn't really like them. Right? Does that make sense? So they're not a form that he finds attractive. So the piety is the forms that he likes. So now you follow them to please him, it's called devotional service. You follow them because they're good, then that's called piety, you know, or good karma, these kind of elements. So the only way we're able to follow those pious things is through devotional service. Right. Does that make sense? So that's there. A few may have some aspects, right? You find people that are just naturally cultured, you know, considerate of others, but their habits are bad. Like one thing I always found that was very interesting. In America, you have, you know, like the South is its own culture. North is its own culture. West Coast is its own culture. So the South, they're considered gentlemen, you know, because they really deal very nicely, very considerate in their dealings and all that. Much more than the Northerners or the Westerners. But it's very interesting to note is in their conversations, even in mixed company, they can use really rough language and discuss really gross topics. But they do it very pleasantly. It's a very interesting, how does that work? But, you know, I've been noticing it over the last few years. It's such a, you know, it just doesn't make sense, you know, like that. So you have this aspect, is there's one good quality, but then there's some other that's not. The reason, let's say the person's wealthy or powerful or famous, you know, is there is some quality that's good. Like that. The guy's famous, say he's an entertainer, he's famous. You could say, but how hard do they work? You know, they work so hard at doing those things. Right? Because otherwise they get on the stage, they make it look effortless, whatever they're doing. That was work. So there's a piety there that they can focus and work like that. But then you see, you know, in their personal life, you know, they're in rehab, they're married for the third time, they're, you know, this and that. Because they don't have it, it's not complete. So they may have one or two aspects. But Varanashram means it's complete. It's a total package. So we can only do from that. So basically speaking, it's only by devotional service. That's why it's that we follow the order of the spiritual master, we somehow or another connect whatever position we're in. Right, because otherwise, why would it say the next stage is to regulate habits? That means we've connected whatever is our not very ideal situation. Then the next is to regulate it and bring it into order and then following those things that are recommended. You know, does that make sense? So that's how we'll do it, through sadhana bhakti, basically. No? Is that okay? So for us, the Varanashram aspects are also part of sadhana bhakti. They're just the indirect aspects, right? So, you know, the chanting, hearing, associating with devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity, living the Dhamma, those are direct, but everything else is indirect. There are the ones, much of our life is controlled by Pancharatra. So then that's also, that could be followed by even the Mlechas and Yavanas, so they qualify, you know, in the way of being focused on Krishna and the cleanliness, regularity. Then that will, then. But anything outside of the what is connected to the temple worship, what we call sadhana, right, then that would be varnashram. So that's done to Daiva. So does that work? So there's hope. Yeah, but it's as Prabhupada says, only devotional service. And he's talking about varnashram means it's only varnashram connected to devotional service. So it's only Daiva varnashram. Prabhupada's not interested or discussing you're just your ordinary varnashram. Right? But because sometimes Prabhupada use the word Daiva and sometimes he won't. You know, just like we say, you know, yeah, you should do this service. Oh, so that means it's mundane? You didn't say devotional service. You know what I'm saying? So Prabhupada's not discussing the mundane like that. Like that. And as we'll see, is Manu is not discussing the mundane either. Manu Samhita is Daiva Varnasha. Like that. Or something else? Yes.
The brahmacharya is struggling with an insensitive nature. Like, so what are the ways in the brahmacharya to deal with that? Because sometimes brahmacharya are awarded with post of responsibility.
Yeah, so but the point is you have to understand that others are people and you have to deal with them as people. So it doesn't matter. The point is the brahmacharis will somehow or another tolerate it because they're just, you know, a little more thick-skinned like that. As an authority, you'll get by because the brahmachari is generally only awarded a position of, you know, it's working within some spiritual authority, right? You know, it's not that the brahmachari is awarded, you know, head of some mundane business, you know what I'm saying, like that. So, therefore, only because of the spiritual element the devotees tolerate it. But it's not that they don't go away and go to another temple or bloop or other stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? But the grihastha, he's forced to, and that's only if he's willing, to learn to be sensitive. It means, ultimately, even if he's not willing, generally I've seen, just my practice, is by the third marriage, they generally are domesticated. You know, I've generally seen like that. Some by the second, but most by the means how rough they are. The third, even the roughest character is domesticated by the third marriage, because he just kind of figured out that not, being a little too rough didn't work in the first two, and you know he's getting too old to have it. You know, he doesn't want to, you know, get married for a fourth time when he's, you know, 60. You know, it's already enough to get remarried in mid 40s or 50s. Is that something? You have to work on the principle that's there. If you're going to go by forms, then you're going to have trouble.
For him, he would do it with this spiritual purpose.
You have to do it with the spiritual purpose because you don't have the material. So that's why you have to work on the intelligence. So the only way someone will be a nice Dika Brahmacharya is if he's able to apply the principles that you would have to learn as a grihastha. He already applied them as a brahmacharya and got realization, because it's only through application you get realization. So he's applied them as a brahmacharya, therefore he remained a brahmacharya. He wasn't able to fully apply them as a brahmacharya, though he understands the how it works, the principle in that, but he hasn't gotten the realization that he'll apply it as a grihastha. But the second class brahmacharya, he'll make a second class grihastha. So basically, he's not going to learn much there. So it's only by the devotional endeavor, the sadhana, that he'll basically develop. So if sadhana is good, then he'll develop. If not, then he's really got a problem. Third class even more. Third class doesn't learn. No, actually, no, it's fourth class doesn't learn. Third class learns, because it's a rougher ride. Right, and then there's us. We're 10th class, so our only chance is through devotion and service. Okay. One cannot enjoy sex life daily at home or elsewhere and attend a so-called yoga class and thus become a yogi. right? Because now he's also specifically talking about here the Ashtanga Yoga. So you can't be engaged daily in sexual activity and call yourself a yogi, right? Because a yogi who's a grihastha, then once a month he's engaging in sexual activity. So therefore, then that's controlled, so that won't disturb his yoga practice, right? But here daily, then it won't work, you know. One has to practice controlling the mind and avoiding all kinds of sense gratification. That's why he said so-called yoga class, because a real yoga class, means devotional service, will say you can't do that. But a so-called, they're not going to worry about it. You know, so long as you listen to whatever they do there, you know, in the thing, pay your fees. When you walk out the door, they're not really worried about it. One has to practice controlling the mind and avoiding all kinds of sense gratification, of which sex life is the chief, right? Because all sense gratification basically comes back to sex life, right? It means nice, fancy food and all generally is there because there is the connection to the home, right? So that's there. One may say, well, you know, he's a kid, so where's sex life? No, but his mother's cooking, his mother's connected to the father. You understand? So it's because that's the environment. It's what goes with it. One can have it without. One can cook nice food. Krishna temple cooks nice food, right? But generally speaking, all the sense gratification, nice clothes, nice dress, the social things, the facilities, that's all connected with grihastha ashram, right? That's why we, you know, it'll seem strange that the brahmachari sannyasis have those facilities. Because the idea is no, that's all for sense gratification. But it also can be, no, it's whatever is to serve Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. It means it could be used, it means brahmachari is using it, called temple, you know, check out things, make sure the books there, where are the vans and this and that. But he could, you know, but grihastha is using it, you know, for that kind of his service, but he's also calling home to see everything's all right there. He's also, you know, seeing that his business is going nice. Right? So it's used in Krishna service, but it has the other applications. The brahmachari, the other applications aren't there. It's only the service. Right? If you say, well, that's ideal, then we're also, when we say grihastha, we're also talking ideal. Because if we want to get down to grati, hey, no problem. You know what I'm saying? You know, the grati as you can get with the brahmachari is like that. Grihastha can go way worse. So it's not worth going there as a matter of argument. You know what I'm saying? So the point is we're looking at the ideal. The grihastha is using his facility for direct activity and also for indirect connected. While the brahmachari is, then it's just used for direct. Right? Now he may forget about Krishna, but it's in a neutral state. Right, so brahmachari will go from neutral to, you know, to positive. The grihastha is situated negative, neutral, and positive, depending upon how you know what's the consciousness. You know, so that's the whole thing. He's practicing bringing everything up to the positive, but he's working from that the negative into the positive. The brahmachari is starting neutral to the positive. Does that make sense? And it's just because the brahmacharis is situated in Brahman. You know, sometimes it seems to have that effect. Right? It's just spaced out. So that being spaced out, he's actually just absorbed in Brahman. But he's unconscious that he's absorbed in Brahman. So that's the weakness. Right? No one can perform correct yoga practice through sex indulgence. Right? Because, yeah. Means... the full means it be an aspect of the total thing, but it's not through that. Right? So it says no one can perform correct yoga practice. One is that the Ashtanga yoga definitely, but even the other forms, it's not the main process. You have the tantric, then they'll engage it, but it's simply to try to bring you up to the human platform. Right? It's not that these aspects of that, because whatever Manu recommends, the Pancharatra, all the scriptures recommend that. That situation in human life, it's the things that they're considered substandard that are taken in the Tantra and used to engage. So someone who's so distracted, then those are engaged. But, you know, that who knows how many lifetimes you're working over there. Thousands and thousands of lifetimes and just come up to a proper standard. So it's not. So here Prabhupada says no one can perform correct yoga practice. Right? Like that. Brahmacharya's taught, therefore, from childhood, and one has no knowledge of sex life, right? Because kids do things that, that, you know, it's not connected with that. It's just some, you know, they're fun, you know, they're showing off. It's just some fun. It doesn't have any other meanings and things like that. You know, therefore, we'll say they're innocent, right? That children at the age of 5 are sent to the Gurukula, or the place of the spiritual master. And the master trains the young boys in the strict discipline of becoming brahmacharis, right? So he probably used it. Trains them, because otherwise they don't know, and strict discipline, because if it's not strict discipline, the fun part is the grihasthas will come on, oh, you're so strict with the kids. But the wife is like 10 times stricter with the husband. But the point is why does she have to be so much stricter? Because he wasn't trained when he was young. If he was trained when he was young, then it would just be a matter of her disciplining to make into the form that is agreeable to her. Mm-hmm. Right? But she has to actually take raw material and turn it into, you know, basically human, then into man, and then into the detail of what she wants her man to be like. Does that make sense? But in the Vedic system, she only has to make what kind of man she wants. Mm-hmm. He already is a man, and he's already human.
Save time.
Huh?
Save time.
Set time.
Saving time.
Saving time, yes, yes. So, you know, in other words, you know, grihastha life in your 20s goes very nicely rather than finally in your, you know, 40s and 50s it's going okay, you know. Yeah. Of becoming, so it says, the master trains the young boys in strict discipline of becoming brahmacharis. Because unless they're brahmachari, they won't be able to follow the Vedic culture. Therefore, it'll be difficult to perform devotional service. Right? Because think about it. We may say so many things, but think about it. Why are devotees going away from devotional, you know, more strict practice of devotional service? Because basically speaking, no one really goes away. It's just a matter, the strictness is falling is so less that it's very, it's not, it's hard to appreciate the devotional platform, right? But if you look at how many are going because they actually just don't agree with the philosophy,
no.
Very few. So therefore, mostly it's to do with culture, right? Their own particular lifestyle they want to follow, their dealings with devotees, particular issues that they may have, social issues. Those are the reasons. So that's why. The training in brahmacharya, then one can be properly situated as a grihastha, right? Then the social system will work very nicely, and then all those difficulties aren't there. Does that make sense?
Right? Yeah. It seems that in some devotees' minds there are three options, either follow perfectly, or not follow, or you're a horrible devotee, because you can't follow.
I think you left out. Was there any not follow perfectly?
No, but see, that's
follow
the one that's missing.
Not follow perfectly.
Yeah, but either follow or not follow, and that's okay, right?
But what about not following perfectly?
Mm.
Like Hiranyakashipu, he's not following
like that.
Perfectly.
Okay. Okay.
You know, perfectly,
yeah,
never
perfectly
thinking
not
of Krishna.
Following. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's probably also there.
Yeah, it's an option as long as you can get up to his standard.
Yeah.
Vishnu will kill you, but otherwise I wouldn't recommend that.
No.
The acharyas don't recommend that.
Okay.
It's rare. Right? You know, you hear of thousands of grihasthas following nicely and going back to Godhead, but you know, there's only a handful of demons that got killed by the Lord, you know, like that. So.
But what I'm getting at is that it's okay to try to follow perfectly, but not actually...
No, because that's why it's called sadhana.
Yeah, yeah.
Sadhana means it's not perfect. Right? So you're practicing.
Exactly.
So, in other words, it's a matter of... Grihastha ashram is still training.
Hmm.
I mean, the whole process is training. The brahmacharya, you're trained in the theory and the principles of the practice. Grihastha ashram is the application of those principles and the details of your specific needs of attachment. Right? So you're still learning. Right? So a good grihastha will be one who's learning. He's not learning, he's not actually a good grihastha. And the day he's not learning is the day also that his wife is not satisfied. You know, just like a teacher. A teacher is a teacher as long as he's learning. When he stops learning, he actually stops being a teacher. He may be able to go through the methods, but he's no longer inspiring to the student. Right? So the husband will be no longer inspiring to the wife. So as long as he's learning, that means he's developing. That means he's ever fresh. That means there's something new. There's variety. Does that make sense? So it's the same process. So we'll say, no, but there's other factors that you're not taking. No, there's no other factor. God made the factors, not us. So that's why Krishna goes through. Even Krishna goes through it. You know, just to set example. Yes?
So Maharaj, in ISKCON, when Srila Prabhupada started to put into application education, he spoke about Gurukul. Theoretically, there is no other option than Gurukul, according to Srila Prabhupada.
There's no other option than Gurukul? Technically, no. Because otherwise, what other option will train you? Because, look at, well, just math. Look at the modern academy, the idea is that there should be some excellence, right? Why do something if you're not going to become good at it? I mean, it's just like, you know, Prabhupada went to the karma school, but where is you have to be good at it, okay? Now, and one may say Prabhupada went to karma school, but Prabhupada went to karma school in the 1800s when there was still some idea of human values and culture. You know, they still studied Greek literature and stuff like that, and you were supposed to improve yourself. Well, now it's purely and occupationally based, so it's only skill based. Mm-hmm. But there's no, you know, your English lit teachers and others will talk about it, but no one takes them seriously. You know, I've even heard in some schools that now these things are being dropped. You know, maybe, you know, some elements of modern literature and that, but these ancient things are just being dropped from school curriculum. So it's not, it wouldn't really compare, you know. You know, just like Oxford was a religious school when it started, it's not exactly now. So, you know, 6 hours a day you're in the school that you have to study, and if you want to actually get good grades, you have to go home and study for 2 hours on your own. Pucka. You know, all the guys that get the, you know, A's, they all do that. So that's 8 hours. Now, with such intensity, because there is no refinement there, there is no addressing the human element. Like I was just hearing yesterday about that they were being told by some, I think it was maybe teachers or some educators, that in some, you know, in some situations in America, in the schools, you know, the grade schools and that, they don't have breaks in classes anymore. Because if they have a break, the kid will go out on the playground, and if he falls over and hurts himself, then they get sued for it. You know, he sued $100,000 because, you know, Johnny fell off the swing, you know. And like that, so they don't have recess anymore. There's no breaks. You know, because generally less will happen at your desk, you know. You could, you know, fall asleep and bang your desk maybe or something, you know. But, you know. So, you know, or, you know, yeah. So, enough absurdities, right? So that's 8 hours. Now, you're going to have to do something, some recreation or something, to unwind from that. And that will be some hours. So that's another 2 to 3 hours. So we've already got 6, 8, 9, 10, 11 hours, right? Then there's going to be some time, you know, with the, you know, with the family, though, you wouldn't necessarily like to be there, you know, like that. But in any case, there's some time with the family. There's going to be watching television and all that. Very important, right? And all that. And then, you know, and then sleeping. Because they're going to sleep at least 8 hours and all that. Because such people that are so focused on that also somehow, I don't know where they picked it out, that the kids grow when they're asleep. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the more you sleep, the more you grow, you know, like that. Otherwise, the guys that, you know, sleep 12 hours would be like, you know, all basketball players. That's got lots of sleep, yes, like that, you know. But the difficulty is that it's the quality of your sleep and other things like that that they don't consider, because you'd have to be into Ayurveda and stuff rather than just the internet, right? So then there, where is the room for sadhana? You know what I'm saying? There is no room for sadhana, right? maybe a little bit on the weekend. But generally because of this on the week, because what we're saying, that playing during the week, that was just so you could survive the day. But now to survive the week, then you need the weekend as a break. And generally sadhana isn't most people's idea. Like that. Some. But those persons would survive either. In other words, those persons would be the ones that do very well in Gurukul. They'll do very well in the modern education. There are very few of them. Like that. Generally, they're Brahminical by nature. So there's a very few of them. So it's just, where is the space for it? Because Prabhupada went, you could say Prabhupada went through it, but Prabhupada went through it and is recommending Gurukul. You know, it's just like the guy who's smoking, he tells you don't smoke because it's bad for you, this, that. He's an authority. You can say, no, but he smokes, so it's okay to smoke. No, but he's smoking and telling you it's not good, don't smoke. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada went through it, but he's not recommending it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, how you say, you know, Rockefeller and all that. The first one, he was poor. You know, I think it was, you know, from 6 or 12, he was working for the family because the father was dead or drunk or died, you know, gone or something. And so then he worked up and made his empire. So now you could say, no, but he was poor, so it's all right for his kid to be poor. You know, like that. No, but he was poor, he doesn't recommend it. You understand? So it's somehow or another you have these weird things. It's not logically thought out. It's based on attachment that we're functioning. So that attachment's not based on human values, so it's not varnashram. So without the proper training, it won't be there. You know? One could say, well, so many devotees, they were brahmacharis and all that, and you know, that didn't work out so great. But at the same time, as you know, most of the time, the thing is it's understood that being Westerners, we may not catch the fine points of varnashram in the beginning. It may take time to figure it out. You know, so as we figure it out, then you teach it. So it's not that, well, you know, we don't like how things turned out then, but that we don't improve it. It's just like we cooked, it didn't turn out good, so we stopped cooking. Right? No, you have to eat, so therefore you have to cook, so therefore you have to learn to cook. So the social system won't work without varnashram. And that means you have to have education to have the varnashram work. So it's no question of not having. It's only a pie-in-the-sky ideal that it can work without it. But it's not working. You know? Like that. It's guaranteed. There's no question that anything else will work. But as long as devotees are attached to the others, they'll make that effort. And they'll always have hope. That's what Maya does. She always gives you hope that, oh, we did it this way. And if we adjust it, then it will work. That's called mental speculation. Right? Mental speculation means I tried for my desire, it didn't work, so I make an adjustment in that endeavor. And then it'll work. And then that didn't work. Oh, because I didn't do this. Right? You know, so therefore, it's like that. You know, but you'll never figure it out. Just like to say, there's some indigestion, you get some acid. So then it's, oh, because what you're eating has more acid, there's more tomatoes, so I reduce the tomatoes, then I won't have acid. You still have acid. It's less, but you're still getting acid. Right? So it doesn't matter what you do, it's no matter what I do, I still get acid and all of that. That's because in the Ayurveda, it mentions that when you eat, it should be a pleasant environment. Right? But most of the time when you sit down with devotees, you always bring up a topic of, you know, some you know, issue or some this or something grungy. Yeah, last night I was sick and I was vomiting all over the place. And it was green and it's not the wall. You know, stuff like that. You say, where does this come from? It's like, you know.
Why?
Yeah. Why? So, therefore, that's why they're getting the acid. You know, it may be also there's a sensitivity, and by adjusting the diet, that could have help, but they'll never fully, because they're not, the lifestyle's not, because that's based on Shastra. And that they won't know, because it's all that. So no, it's like Krishna or Vedic culture. You know, it's like one or the other. You know, somehow or another, modern culture is so nicely yukta vairagyas with Krishna, but Vedic culture is no way you can yukta vairagya that one. You know what I'm saying? So what we're saying is it's incomplete. Anything that's not Vedic is incomplete. And no matter how hard they try, the devotional content means that the person taking the Western, connecting it to Krishna, they will advance, they will go back to Godhead. But it doesn't mean that their social life and social environment that they're in will be nice. That will always not be nice. And it will be an impetus for them to go back to Godhead. Right? But devotional processes still work. Just the social one doesn't. So the sage is being kind on the living entities, even though those living entities are attached. They still don't want them to suffer. Like Jarabara didn't want even the deer to suffer. Right? So let alone anybody else. So that's why they give him advice how materially they can do nicely. But it's meant that niceness is connected to Krishna. So therefore the Vedic system is given, the social system is given, because it's the only thing that works nicely. You know what I'm saying? Other things don't work. Like that.
Right.
Yes.
We see kids after training in the Gurukul go the opposite direction.
We see kids trained in the Gurukul go in the opposite direction. What do you mean by opposite?
They're being trained.
Trying my new endeavor.
No, it's like they've been very strict and, you know, follow sadhana and, uh-huh. You know, being a devotee. And
then?
They rebelled.
They rebelled.
Yeah.
What do you mean by, I don't quite mean, what do you mean by rebel?
That's...
They get a tattoo? Or
no.
They wear long hair?
They stop practicing probably.
They stop practicing.
Yes, they practice. At least for some time. Some
okay.
Them, they,
but
they,
then do they go back?
That's the history we tell.
Huh? But it means if you look at those ones from earlier, much of them practice and stuff like that. Yeah, it means you do have that. But then you could also take it as a parallel. The temple brahmachari training, and then when they get married, do they still follow the same strict standards?
Not the same.
Yes, so that means, then that would mean, so what I'm getting at here is that when we say Gurukul, it's just like brahmachari training. We're saying a first-class brahmachari makes a first-class grihastha. So the point was, is did they become a first-class brahmachari in Gurukul? If they did in the temple, then they'd use a grihastha. But did they in the Gurukul become a first-class brahmachari? So the point is the training they were given such a way that it produces first-class brahmacharis? So it could be that the reason they went away is the training wasn't ideal. It was, they were trying to create a Gurukul environment, but did they? Just like the person was trying to cook, but someone who knows cooking, would you actually call that cooking? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like... someone tries to cook, oh, we're cooking Indian, but an Indian might not call it Indian. You know? Does that make sense? So in the same way as those who understand Gurukul might not actually say that endeavor was actually Gurukul. So to say, no, Gurukul doesn't work, it means it's true. Bad Gurukul training doesn't work. A bad attempt at Gurukul training doesn't work. Right? Does that make sense? This is a general, that's a general comment. Specific is this, everybody's an individual. They're going to make their own decisions anyway. Because if you want to look at the factors of that, what did you give the Gurukul? Right? Did you give them a gold block and say, here, make ornaments? Or did you point out that over there somewhere there's a vein of gold, ore? You can go find it, dig it out, process it, get the gold, then make it into an ornament. But, you only have, 4 years to do it, and I need them for 3 months, every summer, like that, if not also on the weekends. Because that's generally what most teachers had to deal with. You know what I'm saying? So there was, basically speaking, most Gurukuls in the past were not Gurukuls. Because Gurukul means the place of the teacher, not a, what do you call it?
Daycare center.
Daycare center. or a weekday care center. Because many Gurukuls, it became a standard that 5 days a week in the Gurukul and 2 days a week they were at home. And so basically it means, and parents, because of their attachment, there can never be the idea that anything they do could be bad for their children. That's in that list, list of the top 10 of, the first one being that, everybody else is dying, but I won't. So, and then also in that is that because I'm married, I'm already a perfect, spouse. And because I had a child, I'm a perfect parent. And because I'm attached to my kid, the kid has the same attachment for me. And attachment is perfection, therefore I can never do anything wrong. These are all on the list, like that. Of standard illusions, So the point is, Gurukul means is the place of the teacher, means that just like in the home, the wife calls the cards, how it runs, but the father, the husband, he sets the general parameters. So the Gurukul means the teacher sets the standards, and what goes on. And that's done by the Veda, right?
What's the part of the parents? Kids in the group still have parents.
Yes. It's just like kids out of the Gurukul still have teachers. You know what I'm saying? Look at it this way. The reason that a parent is dealing with their kid is because they're attached to it, because they don't like to deal with anybody else's kid. You do have grihasthas that they like any kid. But they're rare in the community. They're actually rare. So if it's not their kid, they don't want to deal with it. Now you have a teacher, they're dealing with everybody there is not their kid. So actually, as far as being a parent goes, a teacher is way, way, way better than a parent. Because they're dealing because that's their nature, their duty. The parent's only doing it because they're attached. They may learn to become a good parent and may come up to the standards, so we're not saying that. But right from the go, and if you say no, but there's so many bad teachers, there's so many bad parents. It's rare I've ever actually met a real good parent. A real parent. If we're looking at standard, because when we do teachers, we go by the ultimate Satyuga standard. If we go Satyuga standard on parents, I've met a few. I have. I remember seeing one mom, she's there with three kids. In the class. And this is, the classroom is as big as, from that pillar over to here. That's all the bigger the classroom was. It was on a farm somewhere. She's sitting with three kids. One is a baby, full-on baby. The next one is, big enough to stand up, so it's 2 or 3 years old. The next one is like 5 or 6. So she's got the baby on one side of one and one side of the other. She paid attention the whole class, kept all three kids engaged. None of them cried or anything. And in fact, the kids even, at times took care of each other and stuff like that. And at the end of the class, she asked very relevant questions. They weren't just, some question. It was something exactly on what you were talking about. That was the parent. Like that. Not these ones over there yelling and screaming and running around. That was the parent. She had, and one could say, oh, well, he had one, okay. So he had three. She had three kids. And I'm not even sure that she and her husband weren't the managers of the farm. I think they were the temple president. So it wasn't that that's all she did, did everything else. So I think she was in charge of the deities and all that, and he did the farming, like that, so they broke it up. So that's if we're going to get into that in detail, we have to. So it's better to stick to the principles, right? That. So the point is they have parents, but what is the complaint of the parent is that they're attached and like to be with the kid, and the kid isn't married, so the kid, there is a possibility that the kid would hang out with them, only if not by law that they have to. But once he's 18, you never know if they'll actually hang out with you. And once they get married, unless you get on good with his wife, there's no question you're going to see your son anymore. It's just, that's reality. I just was seeing, one of our graduates was just saying that this last summer, he just met the other half of the family, right? On his father's side. Huge amount of relatives. And they only live 1 hour away. They were living in one place and they sold their house and moved to another place, but the rest of the family stayed there. And he's in his 20s, and now for the first time he's met you know, met the relatives, you know, like that. So it's like, that's reality, you know? And then we have old age homes. You know what I'm saying? So this whole gloriousness of the parent-child relationship needs to seriously be looked at, is how glorious is it not being based on the Vedic standards? And what is glorious about it is what's based on the Vedic standards. So the point of attachment, that's not the problem. Because Krishna's point is, whatever can be used to advantage is used. So if attachment means you can only correct something if you act, and if the only reason you'll act is due to attachment, great, then let's cultivate that attachment. Because that will make you work. And by working, then if you apply it in Krishna consciousness, according to Shastra, you will be purified, you will be Krishna conscious. So therefore, there's no problem that grihasthas are attached to their family life, to their children. That's not a problem at all. But there has to be the element is that their attachment to their child is that they want their child to become human. And human means there's training. And that means it has to be, at least for boys, it has to be away from the mother. Women don't make men. Women can refine men, but women can't make men. Only men can produce men. In fact, if you really want to have fun, is only men can create the environment where you can have women. Like that. And such women, they'll be good mothers who allow their son to become a man. So the point is if the mother's a man, right, then she's not going to, since she's already, then she can, she's already got all the stuff to make the son a man, but it doesn't work. It's just the way the system, it's just the way it is, you know. It's like you want your bread, it has to sit in the oven for 45 minutes, you know. You may want, you're hungry, you want to eat in 5 minutes, but it doesn't matter. It's got to wait for, so there's a certain amount of time that it takes to cook, get pukka. Because otherwise, if you open the door early, what happens? It collapses. Then you get what you're talking about. Because most kids come out of Gurukul before they're cooked. Like that. So they come out half-baked. And half-baked, you can expect, will go crazy. You know? That's why we have such a thing as before we have them immediately move into the ashram. But now we have it, they only move in the ashram when they're ready. And they means themselves and their parents. Because a boy who's at home, he sees the home, then the school is something different. Right? Because home is normal. And then he goes to the school. But if he's in the school, then home becomes what's different. Right? So if he's not actually ready to be in the ashram, then home is different, then he'll look there, and then he'll get into what he does at home. Because when he goes home, here's that he's got to get up in the morning. When he gets up, he has to wash his own place where he slept, because it's dirty, right? He has to fold up his own bed, he has to put it away, and he has to put it away nicely, right? He has to take his own bath, brush his own teeth, you know, get his own clothes that he had to wash himself, like that. You know, he's got to cook his own food, wash his own pots, serve his own food, like that, you know, and anything else that goes on. You know what I'm saying? But when he goes home, he generally doesn't have to do any of that. So it's like, of course it's better. You know what I'm saying? So unless he's trained, then that's the point. So the difficulty is it's cute when he's a kid. But when he gets older and he gets married, then he expects his wife will prepare everything, cook everything, wash all the dishes, you know, clean his clothes, pick up all the socks all over the place. I mentioned that to one Mataji about, you know, having to pick up the socks, you know, that the husband, that she was German, right? So she said, says, I'd pick them up and then I'd burn them. And then we figured out, he doesn't have any socks. He wouldn't drop them on the floor anymore. Now that's strict discipline. Now you understand why the Germans are like they are, because they have moms like that, right? So you understand is that therefore then he deals with his wife as if all the benefits that he would get from his mom. You'll get. And the mom, you don't see, the child, generally speaking, never sees the bad side. If she's feeling bad or anything, she is grumpy, she's feeling that. Kid walks in, just smiles and all that, like that, you know? So, but the husband doesn't see like that. The husband, you know, how you say, that's WYSIWYG, right? You know. So the difficulty is that he can't figure out why is his wife grumpy, because his mom never is. So he can't deal with it. So it won't work. It can't work. You know what I'm saying? If somehow or another his parents stay together lifelong and all that, and the dealings are nice, he'll somehow get by. But there's no guarantee his kid will. You know, in one of those generations, it'll be lost. Maximum piety running on its own without reinvestment, you get three generations. It means whatever is there in the grandfather, in the grandson's life, it will run out. That's the maximum good karma to go through the generations. So at some point it will disintegrate. You know, so if the parents move to America, then they may do okay. Their children may get by, but the grandchildren, they'll be, you know, they won't even be able to tell any ethnicity of whatever they were from. Does that make sense? So the reality is that it's designed so that the parents have something good. It's just like another example. I'll try it. If this was, it means in any other context it would work. I'm not exactly sure if it will work in for your context, because there it's like the whole country is in armies. So is the son's at home, he's a flake, right? And somehow he goes to the army, right, and all that, and it comes, and then he comes back after his training. But when he comes back, he's not a boy, he's a man. Right? So his mother's very proud. Now he's responsible, he's respectful, he's all those different things. So she's good about it. But it was not easy that he was gone for, you know, so many years. So Gurukul's the same. Like that. You'll be happy later. Otherwise, you get in those few years now, but then in teenage, they don't care for the mom anyway. You know, one has to understand, 10 is the limit of really nice, wonderful mommy-child relationship. That's it. That's the end. 11, they turn into punks. So they still like them up, but it's now their friends become more important. And if you're able to accommodate that, which is hard, because it happens overnight, you know, to go from you're totally everything to them to you're at best 50%. And the control more comes from their friends and from the husband. Right? And that's if you're lucky. You know, and so then to be able to do that instantaneously is not easy. So then they're going to still try to push because they're small. But then 11, 12, 13, they're so punky. Then by the time they get over than that, then they're not interested at all. Then they're just totally into their friends. And if their friends aren't Krishna conscious, they're not going to be. Does that make sense? So there's a lot more dynamics involved. You know what I'm saying? The point is Manu says, mother, father, and teacher, these three are to be respected throughout their life. You know, and traditionally, the teacher's already there before they're born, because who's doing all the samskars? Right? Then when they get an age, then they go to the school. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, but the point is teacher is there throughout. So those three are always there, so there has to be a cooperation. So it's not that if the teacher has any facility, well, what about the parents? No, it's about parents have theirs, teachers have theirs, and it has to be able to work. You know, because whatever it is that you're going to put into the kid, basically speaking, in principle, in volume, it's been put in by the time they're five. After that, it's small amount. After that, teacher can work with it and do something with it. Parent can get very little out of it. But before five, the teacher gets very minimal out of it. The parent gets more. Because they just pick up whatever you do is what is the principle and how they act. You're nice, they're nice fundamentally. You're not nice, they're not nice fundamentally. The teacher can work on that. Does this make sense? Yeah. So this is the Vedic principle. You know what I'm saying? So it's a cooperation. And so it has to be mature. If it's approached from a mature platform, that everybody has their rights, but everybody has their obligations, then it has meaning. Right? Understand, on the material platform, the mother is the most respected. Right. Then the father. But on the spiritual platform, the teacher is the most respected, more than the parents. But, so it's just the way it is. So.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Mitai Gaura Premanandi.